Do we have enough for quorum? Thanks, Larry. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, February 1, 2017. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading by the votes indicated. House Bill number 128, Tribal License Plates, ayes 45, noes 15. Message number 227, House Bill number 192, Court Automation Fee 2, ayes 50, noes 10. Message number 228, House Bill number 220, Ad Valorem Taxation, Liens on Mineral Production, ayes 60. Message number 230, House Bill number 237, Community College Capital Construction, ayes 58, noes 2. Message number 231, House Bill number 242, Ad Valorem Tax Liens on Mineral Production, ayes 54, noes 6. Message number 236, House Bill number 151, Cigarette Tax, ayes 31, noes 28, excused 1. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the votes indicated. House Bill number 176, Veterans Tuition Waiver Program Requirements, ayes 58, noes 2. Message number 223, House Bill number 74, Agent Orange Health Awareness Month, ayes 60. Message number 226, House Bill number 180, Vital Records Fees, ayes 42, noes 18. Message number 229, House Bill number 229, Game Animals Hunt Consultation Services, ayes 48, noes 12. Message number 232, House Bill number 136, Campus Carry, ayes 40, noes 19, excused 1. Message number 233, House Bill number 137, Wyoming Repeal Gun-Free Zones Act, ayes 47, noes 13. Message number 234, House Bill number 194, School Safety and Security, ayes 46, noes 14. Message number 235, House Bill number 209, Disparity in Wages and Benefits Between Men and Women, ayes 37, noes 23. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
With that order of business, introduction, reading, and reference of House bills. House Bill 91, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 91, engrossed, alimony termination, sponsored by Representative Lone, passed the House, ayes 49, noes 9, excused 2.
House Bill 91, referred to committee number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 152, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 152, engrossed. Search and Rescue Operations, sponsored by Representative Lindholm. Passed the House, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 152 be referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 153, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 153, Parental Rights, sponsored by Representative Jennings. Passed the House, ayes 50, noes 7, excused 3.
House Bill 153 will refer to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 161, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 161, Divorce Residency, sponsored by Representative Pelkey. Passed the House, ayes 53, noes 4, excused 3.
House Bill 161, referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. House Bill 218, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill 218, Motor Vehicles Registration Fees, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, ayes 44, noes 16.
House Bill 218, referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 219, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill Number 219, Driver's Licenses Fees, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, passed the House, ayes 44, noes 16.
House Bill 219, referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. House Bill 40, first reading of the House bill.
House Bill number 40, engrossed, Education Accountability, sponsored by the Statewide Education Committee, passed the House, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 40, referred to committee number 4, Education. House Bill 76, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 76, engrossed, American Indian Education Program, sponsored by Representative Allen, passed the House, ayes 49, noes 11.
House Bill 76, referred to committee number 4, Education. House Bill 126, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill 126, Elementary School Foreign Language Requirement, sponsored by Representative Piperinen. Ayes, about passed the House, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2.
House Bill 126, referred to committee number 4. Education, House Bill 189, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 189, engrossed, Higher Education Non-Resident Tuition, sponsored by Representative Harshman, passed the House, ayes 46, noes 16.
House Bill 189, be referred to committee number 4, Education. House Bill 24, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 24, engrossed, Water Commission Duties, sponsored by the Agriculture Committee, passed the House, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 2.
House Bill 24, referred to committee number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 86, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 86, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, sponsored by the Water Committee, passed the House, ayes 57, noes 2, conflict 1.
House Bill 86, referred to committee number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 114. First reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 114, engrossed, Service and Assistance Animals, sponsored by Representative Brown, passed the House, ayes 49, noes 9, excused 3.
House Bill 114 will be referred to committee number 5, Agriculture. House Bill 121, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 121, engrossed, Fishing Licenses, sponsored by Representative Allen, passed the House, ayes 57, noes 3.
House Bill 121, be referred to committee number 6, Travel. House Bill 130, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 130, engrossed, Harvest of Trophy Game and Fur-Bearing Animals, sponsored by Representative Lindholm, passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 130 will refer to committee number 6, Travel. House Bill 56, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 56, engrossed, Mobile Homes, Title Status Upon Permanent Foundation, sponsored by Representative Lindholm, passed the House, ayes 58, noes 2.
House Bill 56 will refer to committee number 7, Corporations. House Bill 186, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 186, engrossed, Improvement and Service Districts Services, sponsored by Representative Kirkbride, passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 186, referred to committee number 7, Corporations. House Bill 84, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 84, engrossed, Workers' Compensation, Delinquent Employers, sponsored by Representative Barlow. Passed the House, ayes 54, noes 3, excused 3.
House Bill 84, referred to committee number 10, Labor. House Bill 92, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 92, Payment of Wages Upon Termination, Time Limits, sponsored by Representative Larson. Passed the House, ayes 58, excused 2.
House Bill 92, referred to committee number 10, Labor. House Bill 113, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 113, engrossed, Medicaid Waiver Program Military Personnel, sponsored by the Labor Committee. Passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 113, referred to committee number 10, Labor. House Bill 142, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 142, Governmental Immunity, Waiver for Health Care Facilities, sponsored by Representative Connolly. Passed the House, ayes 57, noes 2, excused 1.
House Bill 142 will be referred to committee number 10, Labor. House Bill 156, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 156, engrossed, Involuntary Commitment, Emergency Detention Amendments, sponsored by Representative Barlow, passed the House, ayes 60.
House Bill 156, referred to committee number 10, Labor. House Bill 164, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 164, Professional Licensing Boards, Telemedicine, Telehealth, sponsored by Representative Barlow. Passed the House, ayes 55, noes 5.
House Bill 164, referred to committee number 10, Labor, and House Bill 171, first reading of the House Bill.
House Bill number 171, engrossed, Unemployment Insurance, Delinquency Contributions, sponsored by Representative Barlow. Passed the House, ayes 57, excused 3.
House Bill 171 will refer to committee number 10, Labor. Reports from standing committees.
February 1, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 148, Agricultural Tax Valuation, Farmstead, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Mr. Chairman, we're ready. Senator Coe.
May I have privilege of the floor, please?
You may.
Join me, if you would, in welcoming some good friends of mine from Cody, Bruce Eldridge and his wife, Jan. Bruce is the executive director of the Buffalo Bill Center of the West and invites you all to our reception tonight at Little America. Please welcome Bruce and Jan.
Welcome. It's great to see you down here with the legislature. Senator Perkins, we're ready for bills for consideration, or ready for consideration of bills on general file.
Thank you, Mr. President. I knew what you meant.
Oh, just a second, Mr. Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, privilege of the floor.
You may.
Fellow senators, please join me in welcoming my lovely wife, Zanny, to the Senate.
Welcome. Anybody else? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Now, Mr. President?
Now.
Thank you, Mr. President. I move that the Committee of the Whole resolve itself back into the Committee of the Whole again for consideration of bills on general file.
Heard the motion. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Wow, that's positive. All those no? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Do I need to bring the cowbell out again, Mr. President? Come on.
Senator Driscoll, would you please come forward? You are definitely going to be under the eye of a certain person out there in the audience tonight, this afternoon.
Committee of the Whole, please come to order. First bill for our consideration is Senate File 145. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 145, UW and Community College Boards of Trustees Chairman, an act relating to the University of Wyoming and Community College Boards of Trustees, sponsored by Senator Nethercott. Was referred to committee number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, Pappas, Rothfuss, and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Move when the committee of the whole rise and report it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 145. Defer to Senator Nethercott.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Senators, you have in front of you Senate File 145. This is a bill of nomenclature where we are simply changing the name President to Chairman as it relates to the leader of the Board of Trustees for both the University of Wyoming and the community colleges of our state. That really is the purpose of the bill. We were... this is at the request of those particular entities, and so they're requesting that simply to create... to clear up any kind of confusion, if you're talking about the president of the institution or the leader of the Board of Trustees, which is most commonly referred to as the chairman. So we're just clearing that up for them in statute, so it's clear when they draft their policies that their policies do reflect what is listed in statute. I will point out that in addition to that particular change for this bill, on page 3, line 22, we are increasing the amount of executive committee members that the University of Wyoming can have with their Board of Trustees from 3 members to at least 3. There are some executive committees that they maybe need some more manpower with, and so they'd like to have that increased from the minimum to 3. So with that, I would stand for any questions and ask for your aye vote.
You ready for the question? All of those in favor, Senator Coe's motion to the committee of the whole rises to report that do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 145. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 145 is passed the committee of the whole. Senator Dockstetter, could you come up?
Next bill for our consideration, Senate File 147. Is the reading clerk read the bill? Got it. Oh, we're good.
Senate File 147, Livestock Inspection and Investigators, an act relating to livestock, sponsored by the Appropriations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Senator Hicks, Chairman Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee the whole rise to report that it do so with the recommendation
of Mike, who?
You're good.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the committee of the whole rise and report that it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 147 do pass. There is a standing committee amendment, if I could have it read in at this time.
Committee clerk, read the amendment.
Senate File 147, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 1.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 147. For an explanation of this bill, I would turn it over to Senator Driscoll.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. This good little bill comes out of the Appropriations Committee. I'll kind of walk you through the amendment because it significantly changes the bill. We'll deal with it, and I'll explain the bill as we go. Track the amendment in when you go to page 1. Strikes out providing for livestock, and on line 2 strikes the entire line, which actually took out a portion of the bill. It was set up to move a livestock investigator over to the Department of Criminal Investigations. The next strikeout we have is on line 8, strike Wyoming Statute 91613D and comes out, and we leave in on line 8, 112408B and add is to that. We strike the balance of the page, which would be lines 11 through 14. And going to page 2, we strike lines 1 through 3. And these, once again, we went back to when we were put in a position into DCI. The last strikeout would be on page 3, and we're striking lines 1 through 4, which would have moved some of the equipment from the livestock investigator position over to DCI, merely leaves it back in it. The balance of the bill that's left after we've taken that off is just a nice one-page bill now. And what it does is on line 17, it strikes 20% and raises it to 25% on there in the first part of line 18. What this does is allows the livestock board to raise their fees by 25% in a given year. When we get to the budget, we'll explain to you that the general fund portion of the budget, one half of it for the livestock board, has been stricken in the budget, and this allows
the Livestock Board to raise brand fees by 50% over a couple of years to take it off the general fund. We're going to see a series of these type positions moving general fund money back to the general fund. With that, I'd stand for questions.
Question on the amendment out there now. Do you want a question on the amendment or questions on the amendment at this time?
Questions on the amendment.
Questions on the amendment to President Bebout. We're on the amendment. Question on the amendment. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 147, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Amendment's passed. Back on the bill, Senate File 147. President Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I didn't get the memo. I just want to be sure that I understand.
I and put him back under the board for the Livestock Board.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. President, yes, that's exactly. We initially had moved a position totally out. We actually had moved from four livestock investigators and one AWAC position. We cut all of those positions except one. We had moved it to DCI, and this bill, the way it's done, moves that position back and leaves it in the way it was, which is, as far as I know, how everybody wanted it.
Okay, thank you. Further questions on Senate File 147, livestock? Question on the bill, Senate File 147. All those in favor of Senator Hicks's motion, when the committee of the whole rises to report, do so with a favorable motion on Senate File 147. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say nay. Bill is passed. Next bill up for consideration. Senator Driscoll, did you want to return?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to stay for one more bill. I think I'm going to need to help with Senator Christensen's bill.
All right. Next bill up for our consideration, Senate File 148. Reading clerk, read the bill.
Senate File 148, Agricultural Tax Valuation Farmstead, an act relating to ad valorem taxation, sponsored by Senator Christensen, was referred to Committee Number 5, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with the recommendation of due pass on Senate File 148. There is a standing committee amendment, if I could have that read in at this time.
Reading clerk, read the amendment.
Senate File 148, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 3.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File Number 148, and I will turn it over to Senator Christensen for an explanation of the bill and the Standing Committee Amendment.
Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate, this bill comes to us after an interesting account. Up in the home county, one of our ranchers this year gave me a call and said his taxes shot up. He said, well, what do you mean your taxes shot up? And it was the taxes under the land, under his barn, his corrals, his shop, that area. And it went from, for a 3-acre piece, and it is nice land. It went from about in the $120,000 range to $750,000 range in 1 year. So he went in and said, what's going on? What happened? Because he has other properties with similar facilities on them that didn't increase. And they said, well, we don't know why those others didn't increase, but in this case, when we looked at the strict reading of the Department of Revenue rules, any ground that's been disturbed, that's not in production, needs to be valued at fair market. And what fair market means is residential. And so they took a 3 acres and compared it to another 3-acre lot in that valley and came up with this incredibly high valuation. But it was only on one piece of property of his. It also happened on another piece. The adjoining neighbor went through the same thing. And so he came to us and said, there seems to be a lack of consistency. And so he checked all the other pieces of farmstead classified by Department of Revenue rules and found out there were only two pieces that saw that kind of an increase. And his concern was not only Do you see a huge increase in property taxes under those pieces of, you know, those farm structures, farmstead structures, we're going to describe them. But the way it changes, there's a real uncertainty, and they anticipated that once that happens, there's really no reason, if you're not going to be consistent, to do that throughout our county. And then his concern, having grown up in the center of the state in an ag family, is what works out in one area and flies could move its way across the state of Wyoming. When he went into appeal and talked to him and tried to understand, what he was told was, well, we only raised it on 3 acres. You should be happy because I could have raised it on 6 acres, and that's the driveway. That's the road out to the haystack. That's any soil that's been disturbed. So he said, thank you very much, and was happy he only got hit with a three-acre increase. So that's the short version of why we went into this. And I'll ask you to let me talk a little bit about existing statute and where the Department of Revenue bases their rules and how they send out their valuation books to the assessors around the state. And it goes over to Title 39-13-103-BX. And there are three different, there's different categories in here. And what they base their ruling on is that it's supposed to be in A, the value of the ag land shall be based on the current value of the land and the capability of the land to produce agricultural products, including grazing and forage, under normal conditions. But then there's a paragraph B that says, and that it says this also, under X, the following shall apply for ag land. I gave you part of A, and here's B. Contiguous or non-contiguous parcels of land under one operation owned or leased shall qualify for the classification as agricultural land if the land meets each of the following qualifications. And the very first one is land presently being used and employed for an agricultural purpose. So A would have you think that that agricultural purpose is grazing and forage or growing crops. But under B, the very first category, when it says agriculture purpose, we look back into 39-13-101 in definitions. An agricultural purpose says used as for the following land uses when conducted consistent with the land's capability to produce. And now if you'll look at the bill, and we have a significant amendment, but the original language of the bill on page 2, on the top of page 2, starting on line 3, we get that definition that is consistent and already in definition and agriculture purpose, and there is a definition of C, rearing, feeding, grazing, or management of livestock. And so that doesn't say just growing crops or raising pasture. Existing statute already talks about rearing, feeding, grazing, or management of livestock. So that implies that there's agricultural buildings, whether it's a shelter, calving barn, lambing barns, you name it, hay sheds. That becomes an argument. So what we did is we came in with some new language, and we used the term farmstead. And in the amendment, it has been improved to say farmstead structure. And now if I can draw your eyes to the amendment. And the amendment starts over on page 1, and right on the first paragraph, on line 1, the end of line 1, this is really about revising the definition or including new language for the definition of agricultural purpose to include land used for a farmstead structure. And that's in our amendment. So then we go down to over onto page 2, and on line 5, after produce, we insert, or when supporting the land's capability to produce. And so I'm going back and forth between the bill and the amendment. And on the amendment, on page 2, line 10, or it's on line, it's on, the amendment is line 9, but it refers to page 2, line 10 in the bill. We add the word structure after farmstead. And the idea is really to focuses down and get it very narrow, and I'll explain why this is so important after I get us through the amendment.
All right.
Senator, let's do this. Why don't you just give us a wrap-up summary statement of what this amendment does? It looks like it focuses around farmstead structure. Go, kind of wrap this part of it up so we can get back into the discussion.
Dick, thank you, Mr. Chairman. In essence, the new paragraph that defines what a farmstead structure means, it talks specifically about uses that would support an ag operation, barn shop, shed, granary, corral, or other structure. And then it goes in to clarify on the amendment that it has to, it's not built for human habitation or used for human habitation or part of a structure built for human habitation. And then it needs to be built on land used for agricultural purpose and supported by the structure. So what this does, the reason this language is so important is our assessors had some concerns, and they had concerns about how it could be exploited. And so this new language, this amendment, really sucks that down to where people, if it's not very clearly barn shop, corrals, so forth, it doesn't qualify. The land is to be valued consistent with the rest of the ag land. So if you have a field raised in pasture, the land under the buildings, under those farmstead structures, would be consistently valued. If you have land that's raising irrigated crops, it would be consistently taxed. That's the idea. And part of this was to get away from anybody trying to use the mudroom on their house where they put their dirty boots or their dog sleeps or the garage or where they might put, you know, vaccinations in the cupboard inside.
Okay.
And also so that people didn't try to use you know, a headquarters office in downtown host city where we are now.
All right. Okay, Senator, if that does it on the amendment, are you ready for discussion on the amendment?
Ready for discussion on the amendment.
Discussion on the amendment and questions on the amendment. Question on the amendment? Question haven't been called. All those in favor of Senator Hicks' motion that Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 148 passed, all those in favor say aye. All those opposed say nay. Amendment is passed. Back on the bill, Senator Christensen.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In essence, this just goes to define what most of us expect and clarifies some confusing language between existing statute and Department of Revenue rules. This puts in new language that is consistent with existing statute and really kind of identifies clearly what that is and shuts down a lot of questions. We had testimony from the Department of Revenue that this area was one of the most contentious areas that they deal with. And so this is about simplifying it so the common person can read it and understand it.
All right. We are back on the bill, discussions, and questions related to the bill now. Senate File 148. Questions? Question haven't been called. All those in favor that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable motion of Senate File 148, Agricultural Tax Evaluation Farmstead. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say nay. The bill is passed. Next bill for our consideration, Senator Driscoll. There's it. Two. Three here.
Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 171. Clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 171, Civic Proficiency Examination 2, an act relating to education, sponsored by Senator Pappas. It was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, and Pappas. Noes, Senators Raffas and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
Senator Coe.
Mr. Chairman, move when Committee of the Whole rise and report do so with due pass recommendation on Senate File 171. There is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that be read in at this time.
Senate File 171, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Mr. Chairman, move the Standing Committee Amendment for an explanation of the Standing Committee Amendment and the bill. Defer to Senator Pappas.
Senator Pappas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I bring to you today Senate File 171, Civic Proficiency Examination. Just a little bit of background. In Wyoming, we currently have a statute that requires all schools to teach on civics education. And furthermore, the statute requires that a student pass an examination in order to receive a high school diploma, an associate's degree, or a baccalaureate degree. However, the examination is not defined in statute. Our current statute doesn't address the question of what happens if a person doesn't pass the examination. And the examination in statute isn't subject to the student's IEP or the Individualized Education Program under the Federal Individuals with Disabilities Education Act. And so this bill is basically before you to address those issues. And just for a little bit more background, 14 states have passed what's called the Civic Education Initiative in some form or fashion since 2015, and there are over 20 additional states that have either already introduced this language or are considering a legislation such as this. So, with that being said, let me turn to the bill, and I'll talk about the bill first before I discuss the amendment. The bill, in a nutshell, if you'll just go to page 3 first, lines 4 through 13, is kind of the crux of the bill. Beginning school year 2018-19, the examination required to receive a high school diploma shall consist of 100 questions identical to the questions that the United States Citizenship and Immigration Service may ask an individual during the application process for United States citizenship in accordance with that federal law there. To pass examination, a student shall answer correctly not less than 60% of the examination's questions. A student may take the examination as many times as necessary. So that's kind of the gist of the bill. On page 2, at the top, we're stating a finding that the study of American civics encompasses what it means to be a good citizen, fosters an understanding of how government works, and informs citizens on how they can participate and influence their government. On line 12 through 15 is deleted because we've put it kind of rearranged the paragraph and put it down on 20 in its own little subsection C. And then on page 3, line 15 through 17, this is where we're addressing the IEP for those individuals with disabilities. So that portion of it has been taken care of. On to page 4, this is addressing what the state board shall do. And so in consultation with the local school districts, establish requirements for students to earn a high school diploma and evidence by course completion, and we're adding, and the passage of an examination on the principles of the Constitution of the United States and the state of Wyoming in accordance with this 21.9.102, which we just added that paragraph D, the page before. And then, conforming language down on line 19 through 21. And on page 5, the effective date is July 1st, 2017. So that's the bill. Let me, did we move the amendment? Yes,
sir. Amendment has been moved.
So let me discuss the amendment, because the amendment goes a step further. We understand that just by taking this examination, which is a very basic examination, it really does not do what we would, a lot of us would like to see do, and that's begin to elevate the civics education in our state for our students in our state. So what the amendment does, it now requires us to go into the government and civics common core of knowledge, and requires the state board to open up that standards. The amendment requires them to review to look at their standards. I believe that We will have another amendment here to actually request them to review and update the standards. But this is intended to elevate the reason why we are actually even wanting them to take the civics test to begin with. We understand that that's kind of the floor. It's the spark that got us going into additional civics education, and we want to elevate that. And this amendment also then requires findings and recommendations to the Joint Education Interim Committee. So if you look at the proposed amendment, we're in 21.3.110, duties of the Board of Trustees. We're saying that the Board of Trustees in each school district shall, beginning school year 2018-19, ensure that the examination required to receive the high school diploma under the statute we just added, that paragraph D, is administered in accordance with that section. Then in 21.9.101, we are going to the Common Core of Knowledge, and we're changing that language from government and civics, including state and federal constitutions. We're taking that out, and we're adding the essentials of the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the State of Wyoming, including the study of American institutions and ideals pursuant to 21.9.102. Then, going on to Section 3, which is Line 6 of your amendment, the State Board of Education, in consultation with State Superintendent of Public Instruction, shall evaluate and review the government and civics area with Common Core of Knowledge and report the findings by December 1, 2017, to the Education Interim Committee. So with that, I would ask that we vote on this amendment and ask for your favorable consideration on the amendment.
Question.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt the...
Senator Agar.
I really appreciate the bringers of this bill and appreciate the process that they're seeking to go through. I just have a small question about the essentials of the United States Constitution. How or who determines that?
Senator Pappas.
Again, the Common Core of Knowledge is part of the standards, the nine areas of standards that are looked at, and the State Board of Education, that's their job to determine those standards.
Senator Burns.
I was wondering if any discussion took place during deliberations on this bill about the place of exchange students.
Senator Pappas.
Mr. Chairman, no, that topic did not come up.
Senator Wassenberger.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the bill. And point of order, I'll sit down.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, Senate File 171, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion to adopt Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 171 is passed. We are back on the bill. Senator Pappas. More?
I think we'll turn it over to my colleague behind me.
Senator Wassenberger.
Chairman, on and against the bill for a number of different reasons, but I think the bill does have some merit in a sense that we would have some results actually from across our state on what is going on within our civics classrooms. But the problem is that I don't think the results are going to really tell us anything. And the reason for that is we're requiring this as a part of graduation. And when you get, at least in my district, students to the senior level, the last thing you'd want to have happen is for those seniors not to graduate because they couldn't pass this test. And so we put some sideboards in it, which we have the sideboard in it for special education. But then we also say, well, we're going to allow the students to take the test over and over and over until they get it right. And eventually, I would think that sooner or later, those students would all pass. And even to the point if you had to sit down with them and help them with the assessment. You need to remember that there's also a study guide with this. The study guide is online. You can read each question. You can read the answer to the question. Or if you can't read, you can click on the audio version and listen to the audio for all those questions. But the reason why I oppose the test is because of something called Bloom's taxonomy. And Bloom's taxonomy was first developed by a man by the name of Benjamin Bloom, and it was published first in 1949. And essentially what it is the difficulty of questions that are asked in an assessment or test. And so when you were in your undergraduate classes in educational philosophy, you were taught by your professors that if you design your own assessment or test, that it should have a broad range of questions in all areas of Bloom's taxonomy. And those areas are simple recall, comprehension, application, analysis, synthesis, and evaluation. The evaluation being the hardest. And so when I was working with my teachers, I would talk to them about lower order thinking skills, which we called LOTS, or higher order thinking skills, which we called HOTS. So you wanted a broad range on your assessment in both of those areas. And when I went to the website to take this test, I know the Senate finds it shocking that I actually got a 100% on the test. And I am actually smarter than a fifth grader. So, having said that, when I looked at the test is all simple recall. That's it. There is no analysis. There is no synthesis. There is no comparison. There's nothing like that. And so, essentially, as a social studies educator for 16 years, I thought, you know, if I had designed this test myself, I'd say, this is not a good assessment of what's going on in my classroom. And what is a good assessment? Well, a good assessment has all kinds of essay questions on it. It has a broad range of questions on it in all areas of Bloom's taxonomy. So my question is, at the end of the day, when we have all 48 school districts report their results back to the state, they're all going to be the same. Every kid made it through. So what are we really doing? All we are essentially doing is putting another hoop in front of our teachers. And to me, it's a violation of local control, and the most local control that you have. And that local control is the classroom itself and the educator in that classroom. And so I just don't think this bill is going to do what people say it will do. And lastly, I just finished a book a few days ago called Dark Money. And it talked about 501c3s. And 501c3s are organizations of political philanthropists that pour money into a specific thing that they want other states or other things to do. And so I feel like we have all kinds of outside influence pouring into our state to try and get this bill to pass. And one of the things that we were told was that 14 states have passed this. Well, that means that 36 states have not. And so I would say that we're still in the majority. And I just don't see how this is going to influence our classrooms, how it's going to make them better. And lastly, I'd like to also state that essentially this bill was in the House. It died in committee, and now we have it here. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would urge you to vote no.
Senator Bobbs.
Mr. Chairman, I have to agree with a few comments that my colleague from Gillette discussed. It is a basic test, and I agree with all of his comments on the exam. The question is, it is just a beginning for us here. We don't expect it to be the end all. The statute requires that an examination be taken for graduation. Now, with discussions with the folks from the Wyoming Department of Education, they are actually looking, since it's a requirement for graduation, for some consistency across all districts. One district could give a two-question essay test. Another one could do a 100-question multiple-choice test. There's so much variability, and nothing in the statute addresses how or if each student actually passes. All they have to do is check a box saying that we conform to this law. That's all the district has to do. We don't know that a test was taken or not. And it's required by statute. So this is the entry-level test. I agree that maybe this won't eventually be the test that we want. That's why in the amendment, I think that we need to open up the standards, we need the Board of Education to work on it, and let's elevate civics education in the state of Wyoming. I think we probably need a better test than this with more rigor. I do. Because it also, this test is only 100% on the Constitution of the United States. I think eventually we need to also incorporate the Wyoming Constitution because statute requires that, right? So eventually I think we need to get there. This is just a starting point. And so I urge you to do that because, frankly, as I mentioned to committee, according to the Pew Research Center, only about one-third of all Americans can even name the three branches of the United States government. You know, so that's pretty sad. And according to other studies, I mentioned again in committee that Oklahoma and Arizona showed that less than 4% passage rate on this exam. 4%. We're going to require our students to pass it with 60%. And they can take it as many times as they want. But I think that's going to elevate the visibility of the program, the visibility of civics education. It's going to start the conversation. People are going to think about it. Students are going to think about it. Teachers are going to think about it. Board of Education is going to think about it. I think it's just going to elevate education. And by the way, 92% of naturalized citizens who take the test, immigrants, 92% passage by those folks, and only 4% in some of these other studies of high school students. I think we can do better. Again, I agree, it's a starting point, but let's just start. We'll make it better as we go.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I also had concerns about the legislation in committee. First of all, civics education is certainly essential, Mr. Chairman. There's no question about it, and I think we can do better in the state of Wyoming. But when we look specifically at the legislation and what it asks for, there are a few things that I have concerns with. And the first and most direct on page 3, line 11, is that a passing grade on this very specific required civics test would be 60%. We've heard that it's a very low-level test. It's simple questions, and if you go online and take the sample questions, you'll see things like what are the three branches of government, what are the two longest rivers in this country. So the idea that we would require someone to take this test to graduate and pass it with a 60 almost frightens me, because if you've
hit a 60% after studying for this test. I think what you've proven to me is that you don't understand anything about civics in the country, but we're going to give you your degree. So I would have some concerns with that aspect of it, but that can certainly be amended. The concerns that I have more deeply are with regard to how this is being rolled out and the constitutionality of it and what the process is that takes place right now. Mr. Chairman, Wyoming Constitution, Article 7, Section 11 is the textbook's provision, but it's commonly been interpreted to be the curriculum provision, which indicates that the state of Wyoming cannot prescribe at the legislation level or the superintendent of public instruction a curriculum to the students. That's up to the school districts, and that's constitutional, that's a certainty. And sometimes we sort of go across that line and blur into an area where we're over-prescribing perhaps to districts now and then. I think Mr. Chairman might agree with me on that on some occasions. In this instance, on page 3, paragraph D is explicit and specific in exactly which questions will be on the test. The wording of the questions are prescribed through this legislation. There's no ambiguity. There's no room for an alternative decision by the school district. It is an exact test to be given with a specific language identical to the questions United States Citizenship and Immigration Services may ask an individual that's applying for citizenship. To me, that's nowhere near the line. That's easily into this is the curriculum that you will teach school districts, and in my view, that's an unconstitutional piece of legislation, and so I'm very concerned from that standpoint. That was why I voted against it in committee. This is unconstitutional as I see it from the Wyoming Constitution, and that's up to us, the body, to make that decision. So I'd encourage the body to really give some thought to whether or not that's going beyond the line of prescribing curriculum. But really, even if it's not, Mr. Chairman, we do have a process in place for looking at our standards, looking at what we're providing as requirements to students around the state. And the way that works right now, as it should, is through the State Board of Education reviewing standards on a 9-year rolling basis. And it was just 3 years ago that the social studies and civic standards were looked at, and they were not changed substantially. And that might be unfortunate. That's kind of what Section 3 gets to in this amendment, which is, well, you know, take another look. This might not have been rigorous enough, and I like that part of this legislation. I think it might be time to request that the State Board of Education give that some further consideration. But the State Board is free to do that at any point. You would simply have to go to the State Board and say, we would appreciate it if you would look into the civic standards. They're not rigorous enough. Review them, consider it, and if you think they're insufficient, open them back up and approve new standards. Statute allows for that right now. There's nothing that would preclude them from doing that, but they haven't done that. It's certainly a request that even this body could make through resolution or individual legislators could do. School boards could get that done. It's the process that's in place that keeps the legislature out of the standards process where we shouldn't be. We should have this process conducted independently of political interests, as it is now, and try and make sure that it's up to that State Board of Education to get that done. This legislation reaches in a little too far and is very detailed in how we should handle a certain aspect of civics education by implementing a very specific test. So based on those three concerns, Mr. Chairman, I'd urge the body to reject this legislation, or if not, let's try and get to some significant amendments so that we leave the power of deciding the standards to the State Board of Education and leave the curriculum up to the local boards of education as is constitutionally required.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, on and for the legislation, let me try to deal with some of the objections that have been raised. First, the constitutional question, and that's based on Article 7, Section 11. Let me just read it. Textbooks. Neither the legislature nor the superintendent of public instruction shall have the power to prescribe textbooks to be used in the public schools. Mr. Chairman, basic common sense. Questions on an examination are not a textbook. They're different. And this in no way violates that provision. Second, Mr. Chairman, yes, it's simple, basic information. It's not fancy analysis. It's simple, basic information. And, Mr. Chairman, I have been impressed time and time again with the fact that people I know that are immigrants to this country from foreign countries know more about our Constitution and our form of government than many of our ordinary citizens. And this test will require our citizens to at least come up to what we expect out of the people that are coming in here and will improve, Mr. Chairman, their understanding of the Constitution. And it is appalling how ignorant many citizens are of the basic document that has led to the great success of this country. On for the bill.
Senator Hicks.
Chairman, on and for the bill, and just to kind of address a couple of things. You know, I don't know about Bloomberg's taxonomy and whatever that is and what kind of psychological stuff it is. But let me tell you something. One thing that I do know about learning something, and the real key to learning something is redundancy. If you do it over and over and over and over again, it becomes common knowledge. So that's only what we're saying here is we need to teach this stuff, and maybe in 8th grade, maybe 11th grade, maybe 12th grade. Maybe you got to take the test 10 times. But the more you're exposed to it, the more likelihood is you're going to remember it. And what the comment is maybe that we should run with the pack with the other 34 states. I just remind the body that if you're not the lead dog, the scenery never changes.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 171, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Bill division's been called for. All of those in favor, please stand. All of those opposed, please stand. Pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5, having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Agar?
No.
No. Anderson?
No.
No. Anselmi Dalton?
No.
No. Baldwin?
No.
No. Barnard?
Yes.
Aye. Boner?
No.
No. Bouchard?
No.
No. Burns?
Aye.
Aye. Case? No. Christensen? No. Coe? Aye. Dockstetter? Dockstetter, no. Driscoll?
No.
No. Ellis?
Aye.
Aye. Emmerich?
Aye.
Aye. Hastert?
No.
No. Hicks?
Aye.
Aye. Kinski?
Aye. Aye.
Aye. Landon?
Aye.
Aye. Meyer?
Aye.
Aye. Moniz?
Aye.
Aye. Nethercott?
Aye.
Aye. Pappas?
Aye.
Aye. Perkins?
No.
No. Peterson?
No.
No. Rothfuss?
No.
No. Scott?
Aye.
Aye. Von Fladern?
No.
No. Wasserberger?
No.
No. President Bebout?
No.
No. Closing vote? Closing vote closed. 13 ayes, 17 no.
Senate File 171, having failed a roll call vote pursuant to Senate Rule 6-5A, is deemed indefinitely postponed. Next bill for our consideration is Senate Joint Resolution Number 9.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Kinski.
Yeah, please.
You may.
Ladies and gentlemen of the Senate, we are honored to have with us today the Leadership Sheridan class and the Leadership Johnson County class. Folks, please stand up and get a warm Wyoming Senate welcome.
Yay!
Reading clerk will read the bill, please.
Senate Joint Resolution Number 9, Public School Financing, a joint resolution proposing to amend the Wyoming Constitution to specify that the legislature determines the adequacy of public school funding and prohibiting courts from requiring funding beyond that prescribed by law. Sponsored by Senator Kinski. It was referred to Committee Number 4, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Ellis, and Pappas. Noes, Senators Rothfuss and Wasserberger. Senator Coe, Chairman.
Yes. Senator Coe.
Report to do so with a due pass recommendation on Senate Joint Resolution 9 and defer to Senator Kinski for an explanation of the Senate.
Wow. Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Folks, I would direct you to not only Senate Joint Resolution 9, but also a handout that has in the upper right-hand corner of the first page a road sign that shows this way to the rock and that way to the hard place. I'll start with the handout. I believe that we are at a point in the state of Wyoming, being as we are between a rock and a hard place on K-12 education, where it is appropriate for the people of this state to weigh in on this question. How do you want K-12 education in the state managed and funded going forward? The status quo or something else? To place that question to the people will require a two-thirds vote of this body under the Constitution, a two-thirds vote of the House, a signature by the governor, and then November of 2018, the people would go to the polls and decide by a 51% margin to either approve or disapprove of this constitutional amendment. And I will walk through the amendment here in a moment. I'd just like to give you a little bit of background on how we come to be where we are. The Wyoming Supreme Court started in 1980, weighed in on school educational funding in the Washakie case, where they held that the Wyoming Constitution contains what is essentially, they interpreted as, an equal protection clause on a parallel with the federal government. And they held further that education is a fundamental right, and as a fundamental right, would be held to a strict scrutiny constitutional examination standard. They concluded that inequitable distribution of funding violated that constitutional right and ordered an equalization of school funding. And that's an outcome that I think today we all agree was good. That state's mineral largesse should be equitably distributed amongst the districts. Starting in 1995 in a series of Campbell decisions, though, the court went a bit further. The court found that not only did the Constitution mandate equal funding, but also that the funding must be to the highest possible level to prepare children for the best possible education. Hard to argue with that proposition. But in that case, in a series of cases, it went further to where the outcome is now, that education is dictated by a model that is devised by consultants from Chicago or California or wherever, and those consultants determine what is the best education for our children. That drives the costs, and we are mandated by the court to come up with the money, whatever those costs may be. The court said that school funding cannot fall below that court-sanctioned model, all elements of that model. And we've all heard in discussions in our local communities where folks have said, we'll go to court if you don't do it, and the court will force you to. The court also said all other budgets are secondary, that the legislature has the power to tax at whatever level is required, and that the court has the power to spur legislative action if necessary, which, in fact, it has done previously. What are some of those secondary budgets? Our largest expenditures are prisons and Medicaid health care. It's hard for me to fathom how our public safety and the integrity of our prison system can be a secondary budget consideration, nor the needs of our infirm elderly in nursing homes, nor the needs of the state employees, which their benefit structure would be deemed secondary, the needs of the community colleges, the University of Wyoming. So if it's true that those budgets are secondary, we're between that rock and a hard place where potentially we're forced to raise taxes. What shall that be? A sales tax to fund the gap in the operational portion of the education shortfall alone? The state sales tax would have to go from 4% to 8%. In those counties that have adopted the optional taxes, we're looking at the prospect potentially of the sales tax being at 10%. Which is on a par with the Golden State out on the West Coast, I might add. Or shall it be property taxes or income taxes? I would submit that this is a question that needs to go to the people. And if you'll turn to the next page, I've got three brief benefits of Senate Joint Resolution 9, the Educational Funding Constitutional Amendment. First, the constitutional amendment does not impact any portion of the court rulings dealing with equal distribution of funding. Those remain intact. So such funding as is available must be equally distributed. The constitutional amendment does prevent forced court-ordered tax increases or forced funding cuts to non-education portions of the budget to meet a funding mandate, and in so doing, restores parents, educators, school boards, and the legislature in the role of choosing the best Wyoming education, not courts and out-of-state consultants. So let's do a walkthrough of the bill. It's very brief. On page 2, and this is Article 7, Section 9, Taxation for Schools, the current language says, the legislature shall make such further provision by taxation or otherwise as with the income arising from the general school fund will create and maintain a thorough and efficient system of schools. The additional language is to insert the legislature determines necessary together with the income arising from the general school fund to create and maintain. Now, that should resolve the issue there. That should be enough language right there. But since the courts will retain jurisdiction over equal funding, the quality of such funding is as appropriated, we have added an additional sentence there at the end so that there's not a backdoor method to impose tax increases or other budget cuts through ruling on equality. So this sentence says, no court shall require the imposition of any tax, nor require any other provision of funding beyond those prescribed by law to carry into effect the provisions of this section. That's the legalism. On the next page, you will see the proposition that the voters would go to consider in November of 2018 if both bodies and the governor favorably consider this proposed amendment. The public would see this. This amendment would specify that the legislature shall determine the adequacy of funding for the public schools in this state. It would prohibit a court from requiring the imposition of a tax or other funding in order to provide additional monies to fund schools beyond the taxes and other funding prescribed by law. It's a simple enough proposition for the public. I believe we're at a point in our history where it is appropriate to go out to the public and ask them to weigh in on the question. For your consideration, I'd like to go back through, I'd like to go through a few background facts and information that will form the basis for the public debate if this goes on the ballot. On the next page, a brief run-through of Washakie and the Campbell decisions. Washakie in 80 mandated equal distribution of funding. Campbell 1 in 95 said students are entitled to the best education for the times, and the court opined that that means small schools, small class size, student-teacher ratios, centralized statewide curriculum and standards, all of which culminated in a cost-based model, an evidence-based model. And this model, once constructed, the court said, having no losers in the systems require there be no shrinking pie, but a pie of the size needed. Once education need is determined by the model, the pie must be large enough to fund that need. They went on, competing priorities not of constitutional magnitude are secondary, and the legislature may not yield to them. And they added, lack of financial resources will not be an acceptable reason for failure to provide the best educational system. All other financial considerations must yield. In Campbell 2, the court outlined its view under equal protection interpretation of the Constitution. What were the minimum adjustments for inflation, personnel classification and compensation systems, building maintenance, building condition scoring systems, their opinion as to what the Constitution mandated for those. The court ordered the legislature to fund construction. The court ordered the legislature to fund construction through either a statewide tax or other revenue-raising mechanisms. The court then went on to say, nothing in the Constitution prevents the legislature from raising the entire amount needed by enacting statutes imposing a new category of statewide mill levy at whatever level is required. This is commonly referred to as the unlimited ability to tax ruling. And they did order, in fact, that the legislature create this statewide tax system. Campbell 3, the court set out a clarification of goals on which buildings should be included in the construction program and the time frame for completion. And then they dealt with criticism that its rulings violated the separation of powers. Quote, the legislature's failure to create a timely remedy consistent with other constitutional standards justifies the use of provisional remedies by the court or other equitable powers intended to spur action. When insufficient action in the legislative process occurs, judicial action is entirely consistent with separation of powers and the judicial role. And in fact, you can see in Campbell 2 where the court did issue an order with respect to a statewide tax. These rulings are not unique to Wyoming, but they are typical of rulings in educational equal opportunity cases where other courts have said education is a fundamental right, it's subject to strict constitutional scrutiny, and judicial remedies can be brought to bear to legislatures to force the remedies the courts deem appropriate. Then Campbell 4, the court reviewed the statewide model for at-risk students, salaries, beginning and average salaries, health insurance costs, inflation adjustments. We're all familiar with all the different elements of the model. The court approved the model and then closed the case, subject, of course, to if the legislature does not comply with their view of what constitutes the best education for our times and a pie that must be large enough, that off to court we go. The next page is just a little bit more detail on a court ordering tax increases. This is the case, Supreme Court case of Missouri versus Jenkins, a district court, again, finding that education is a fundamental right under the Constitution, subject to strict scrutiny constitutional analysis, ordered a state to directly impose taxes. The U.S. Supreme Court said that the court couldn't actually impose the taxes, but they could order the local governments to institute the taxes and issue an injunction against any state laws that stood in the way of such levies. So they also said that the court first had to give the local legislative bodies a chance to respond. So what you see play out in these cases is the legislature or the school district will bring something in, the court will say no, not good enough, and they'll go back and forth until they can finally satisfy the court, or the court will simply issue what they want to have happen. The conclusion at the bottom, it's therefore clear that a local government with taxing authority may be ordered to levy taxes in excess of the limit set by state statute where there is reason based in the Constitution for not observing the statutory limitation. On the next chart, we see, let's walk through the developments in school funding since the Washakie Campbell to present. You'll see at the bottom there, Washakie 1980, indication of Campbell 1 in 95, Campbell 1 and 2 in 2001, Campbell 4 in 2008, and the increases in educational funding, and some may object it needs to be adjusted for inflation. I didn't have time to do that. Some may say it simply went up in concurrence with state funding, but the key is it can't go down when state funding goes down. You'll see there at the first red arrow we had a dip in 02-03 of our general fund revenues of 4%, 09-010 of 21%, and yet the funding continued to decrease. If you look off to the right, you know what's going to happen to state revenue, but the model cannot go below what the court dictates to be the best education for the times. Another piece of information that I think may weigh in heavily on the public debate, should this go to them for a vote on the constitutional amendment. Let's look at the average scores for Wyoming compared to the nation from 2000 to 2015. In 2000, you will see that the nation as a whole had an NAP. I believe this is fourth grade reading. I'm not certain. I can go back and find out, but it's typical. The same trend applies to the other NAAP scores. 224 versus Wyoming, 5 points higher on a 500-point scale at 229. By 2015, the nation at 240, Wyoming at 247, 7 points difference, and you will see that the change in educational attainment in Wyoming, the rate of improvement exactly parallels the rate of improvement in the nation as a whole. Turning to the next page, some more data. Comparing NAEP scores, Wyoming 1992 to the U.S., 1992 precedes the Campbell decisions. Taking fourth grade math and eighth grade math and fourth grade reading NAEP scores, grade 8 is out there because the data was missing for the time series I showed. The summation of those for Wyoming pre-Campbell was 723. For the nation, 701, 22 points, or a difference of 3%. In 2015, the summation of Wyoming scores, 762. The U.S., 742, 20 points, or 3%. Now, there was improvement during that time, although the gap between Wyoming and the rest of the nation remained the same because the rest of the nation improved. Was this change due to court mandates? Was this change due to the model? Or is there something else going on in Wyoming and the nation at large that our improvement exactly paralleled the improvement in the balance of the United States? Some more information that I hope will figure largely in the debate amongst the public as to whether to approve or reject the constitutional amendment. On the next page, you will see the top spenders per student among the states in 2015, and then below that, the bottom spenders in education in 2015. Let's take a look at the NAP scores for the bottom five compared to Wyoming, which is in the top 10. We're just below, I think, Connecticut. The next page. Grade 4 math, grade 8 math, grade 4 reading, grade 8 reading. Wyoming 2015, the summation, 1,031. Utah, the summation of those scores, 1,024. The difference between Wyoming and Utah in NAP scores, 1%. The difference between Wyoming and Utah in funding, over $10,000 per student per year. How do we explain that? I don't know what the explanation is, and I think the public is prepared to weigh in as well. Idaho, a 2% difference from Wyoming in NAP scores, and 6,700 per student versus 16,700 per student. Arizona, 3% difference and about a $9,000 difference in funding. Oklahoma, a 3% difference in score and about an $8,000 or $9,000 difference in funding. Mississippi, actually spending more than Utah, Idaho, Arizona, and Oklahoma, still not making the grade on the NAP, but 6% below Wyoming and about $8,000 below Wyoming in per student funding. Now, the key is that 16,700 number, or 16,500, what have you, is what we must fund to that level, all elements of the model. This is 22 years after the Campbell decision. I believe the time has come to put the question to the public. Shall we continue with this model and court-driven system as the status quo, including the prospect of forced non-education budget cuts or forced tax increases? Or is it time to trust the legislature, school boards, parents, and teachers to drive what is the best educational model and funding system for the state of Wyoming? In conclusion, I've got the same benefits page that I started with, and before I go through that, I want to tell you a story about a letter I got just as we were heading into this session from a group of parents in my district. They knew there was problems with funding. It's a small rural area. They got together and they said, what can we do? Where could we cut that we don't think will impact the education of our children? It's a two-page letter, very thoughtful, very well lined out. And I took it to the LSO attorneys and they said, well, these suggestions impinge on the model. A court would hold that they violate their constitutional rights. So I have to let these folks know that the way to incorporate the local community's suggestion into what a good model for the, what a good funding mechanism is for their children is we have to give it to the education committee. They have to see if they can incorporate it into the recalibration when that comes up. We have to see if the consultants, whether they're from Chicago or wherever, are willing to incorporate that into the model. That has to come back. We have to act on it, and then we wait and see if there is a lawsuit, if the court will sign off on it. It breaks my heart to have to tell parents, that's how we drive your child's educational decision-making in Wyoming. And I think it's an entirely fair question to put to the public. Do you want to continue that way? Or do you want to try something different? This amendment preserves equal distribution of funding. It preserves forced court-ordered tax increases or non-education funding cuts. And it restores parents, educators, school boards, and the legislature to the role of choosing the best Wyoming education, not courts or out-of-state consultants. I urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I have some reservations about doing this amendment at this time, and let me see if I can explain them. First, I think the principal provisions of this amendment are already fundamental constitutional principles. And let me see if I can explain that. My argument, Mr. Chairman, rests on two provisions. One is the U.S. Constitution. The United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government. Fundamental principle in the U.S. Constitution, Mr. Chairman. When I've looked in various textbooks and commentaries, what I've found is there's very little court precedent on what that means. The principle generally is just not violated. There haven't been cases on it. Clearly, it means we aren't going to have a monarchy. But I think it means something else, too. When you look back at the history that led to the American Revolution, to the founding of this country and its Constitution. You get back into the colonial objections to the Stamp Tax, Stamp Act, where the Parliament in England, the Crown, had imposed a tax on us we didn't get a chance to vote for. Our elected representatives didn't get a chance to vote for it. And that started, there were violent demonstrations against that. That started us down the road to independence. And the principle was no taxation without representation. And that was further reinforced by the Boston Tea Party, where the citizens took the tea that was going to be taxed and dumped it in the harbor. Act of violence led to the Crown occupying Boston, led directly to Concord and Lexington. Those are fundamental principles. And the court is not a representative body. And I think the principle is that taxation is reserved to the people themselves or to their representatives that are elected on short terms so that they can replace us if we get it wrong. The people hold that in their own hands. And that's, I think, what that Republican form of government clause is all about. And this amendment pretty well echoes that. Second, when you look in the Wyoming Constitution, you look at Article 2. We almost never look at Article 2. But it divides the power of government into three departments. And it says, no person or collection of persons charged with the exercise of the powers properly belonging to one of these departments shall exercise any powers belonging to either of the others, except as in this Constitution expressly directed or permitted. And the court doesn't have something that's expressly directed or permitted. It's building a series of precedents, but it can't go that far. And again, this amendment reinforces that provision. So there's nothing wrong with the substance of this amendment, except that it's already there. And what I wonder, I think the argument we heard from the sponsor of the bill, Mr. Chairman, eloquently reinforces those principles, eloquently describes what's wrong with our current funding system, and why reform of our education funding system is desperately needed. And I think reducing some of the excesses is the first step in the reform. But I wonder, I think that when, after listening to the lecture the other day from the attorney for the state government who's dealt with this sort of stuff in court, I was impressed by the amount of flexibility there really is in the Campbell decisions. I think that we probably have the latitude within those decisions to do the things we need to. It's a little cumbersome, but I think we've got it. I think we ought to exercise it. I don't think that the Campbell requires us to do the best possible, because frankly, Mr. Chairman, that would mean providing an individual tutor for every student in the state all the time. And that is just irrational. And everybody knows it. We aren't going to do that. We're going to strike a moderate balance. And that's our job, to strike the balance between education, which ought to have top priority. Has had top priority I think, in all the times I've been in the legislature. And the other functions that we do have to undertake. And the degree to which we take our citizens' private property via taxation, which is our job as elected officials. We've got to balance all those. That's the primary function of the legislative branch. So my instinct, Mr. Chairman, is that we are probably better off not passing this amendment at this time, because I think it really restates the constitutional law as it really is right now. Now, if the court should encroach, ignore those parts of the Constitution, and seek to build its own empire and encroach on the duties of the legislative branch and deprive the people of their fundamental right under our constitutional system of determining what the balance is between how much we spend on the various functions of government and how much of their property we take by taxation. If the court encroaches on that, then there are multiple remedies. This amendment may well be an appropriate multiple remedy at that point. And I think that under those circumstances, where the people have seen the power clearly abused, they're probably passed this amendment. I'm a little worried, absent that kind of a motivation, whether people will pay enough attention to the issues and say, look, they're trying to change something and it's working all right now. You know, what's the problem? I'm a little afraid of that outcome, simply because I think people won't be motivated to pay the proper degree of attention to it, Mr. Chairman. But there will be other remedies we'll have to look at. Before, when they started to get out of line once, we did have a rehearing, and they backed off just enough to avoid troubles. There's other more vigorous remedies, all kinds of ways you could skin the cat. But I really wonder, at this time, I entirely agree with everything the amendment says. I just think it is already the Constitution, even though not quite as explicitly stated as this does. And I wonder, as a tactical matter, is this the right time to bring this amendment forward?
Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I guess all I know is that you need to either fix or close the barn door before the horse leaves. And I can't predict what the horse is going to do or the courts.
President Bebout.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I certainly hear what my colleague from Natrona County talking about, and I won't argue what he brought up in those two separate positions and what this Constitution say. But what I do is I look at what's happened and what's happening now. And it's kind of like the barn and the door, but, you know, I'm not prepared to take a chance right now. I think that, and I followed this all the way starting, you know, I read about Washakie 1, I lived through Campbell 1, 2, 3, and now 4. See where we are, what's going on. And I think ultimately we have a constitutional amendment like this. It really clarifies what we should do, what we should say. But the best part about it is that people get to decide. And so, in my opinion, now is the right time to do it, not wait, not to see if we in fact have some responsible reductions to the spending that we have, and if we work our way through this problem, and if we in fact do increase revenues, whatever we do, we get down the road and we don't get to where they want, they come back and say all the work we've done for 2 or 3 years is wrong and throw it out. This would eliminate that, and quite frankly, Mr. Chairman, maybe we ought to have a special election and do it this fall. But I think this is a good idea. I like the language. I think it takes care of concerns I have. I would ask the body to approve this, vote it, and let's move it forward.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman,
This brings back a lot of memories. This case that you're looking at in the handout you had, Missouri v. Jenkins, was issued by the Supreme Court in 1990. That was 1990. I was in my beginning my second year of law school. Summer of my second year of law school, this case came out, and between my first and second year, and I actually wrote a case note on this for the Wyoming Law Review on Missouri v. Jenkins. And I looking at that and the application and what it's talking about, there's a couple of distinctions that need to be made that I think are applicable to this bill. And my concern is that this bill doesn't quite get us there, and we may need to work on this a little bit to make it really work. Missouri v. Jenkins, just a little bit of background, and I'm not going to belabor this. What it was a 1983 action suing for civil rights regulations. Kansas City was in de facto segregation. There had been, of course, long time you haven't been able to do, you were ordered to desegregate your schools, and the particular school district, Kansas City School District, couldn't get desegregation done because they didn't have enough money. They're out of money and they couldn't do it. And so they already lost the case and there was a remedy ordered, and so they went out and they were apportioning the remedy partly between the Kansas City School District and partly between the state of Kansas. And ultimately, it was 75% of that was charged against the Kansas City School District. The other 25% was charged against the state. State could cut off its share, but Kansas City couldn't. And they couldn't impose additional property taxes because they were already up to the limit. There was a state statute that said you can't have property taxes above a certain amount. We've got a similar property tax. We've got limits on how much we can charge and how much local counties can charge. Ultimately, the district court decided, well, sorry, that's not good enough, and ordered them, basically suspended state law and said you need to charge X and set the tax rate that they went out. That then went up to Supreme Court. Supreme Court came back and basically said, no, you can't do that. You are wrong to set the tax. You are wrong to set the tax and over above state law. But what you do need to do is you have to go back, and your job, district court, is to figure out how to do this within existing state law. And this is the important part, you have the ability to enjoin the implication of state laws which limit the local government's ability to enhance its revenue. And so you are wrong to charge, basically you are wrong to impose the tax yourself and determine tax rate. But what you should have done, and Mr. Chairman, I think this is the point, this is, in to a lot of us this would be a distinction without a difference. Instead of imposing the tax rate, you were to go back and you enjoin state law limits on increasing that tax, and then Kansas City School District is free to do whatever it needs to do under state law to raise enough money to fund its share of the remedy. And so as I look at the amendment, Mr. Chairman, what we do there and apply that back to what we learned, and this was a long time ago in Missouri v. Jenkins, but the court shall, that what we have in the amendment is the applicable language we're talking about is no court shall require the imposition of any tax, nor require any other provision of funding beyond those prescribed by law to carry into effect the provisions of this section. And so what, comparing that to what happened in Missouri v. Jenkins, the district court was overruled on its imposition of the tax, but what they did do is they said you have the right to go back and tell them that they have the authority to break state law and impose taxes over and above what you were. So you can't do it, but you can basically order the local jurisdiction to do that. And as I look at this, my concern is that not covered here. That as I look at that, no court should require the imposition of a tax. So you can't require the imposition, but in many instances, the taxes would already be imposed. All you're doing is changing the rate or the amount. Now, you could argue that that's not an imposition. I think the concern I would have as you go about doing that is, if you got a property tax, it doesn't matter if the state's got a if you said that's enough, that property tax is already imposed. And my concern is that this might be limited and construed that it would only apply to new taxes and would overcome state law. I mean, obviously, if the Constitution comes in conflict with state law, we know which one prevails. So I think this is a good idea, but I think we've got to make sure that this does what we want it to. Is right now the right time? I don't know if it's the right time or not, but if we're going to do this, we need to make sure that it does what we really want it to do.
Senator Nethercott.
Mr. Chairman, I echo the concerns from the senator from Natrona County. When I read this language, I don't believe that it does what you're intending it to do. I understand what the intent is, and I think the intent is necessary and needed, but I don't believe that this language would achieve the result that you're seeking. I think it's circular, and I think we need to reevaluate that language to make it stronger and say what it is you're actually intending for it to say. I think it's easy to move around it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Perkins. Peterson, excuse
okay.
me. Peterson, excuse me.
My hey, thank you, Mr. Chairman. It don't give it to him.
I've recognized Senator Peterson.
Happens all the time. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll be brief. I on and for this resolution. I think the timing is now. You know, all of us, most of us attended that meeting that morning, and we got the update and got a good education on where we stand. And if you're like me, you came out of that meeting frustrated and realizing that this is a no-win situation. Our hands are tied. And I tried to explain that to my constituents back home. It's a no-win proposition with the automatic escalators, the priority, the challenges in courts. Our hands are tied, and no matter what we do to cut, we can't keep up with it. It is unsustainable. And I don't think there's anything wrong with going back to the people and asking them, what do you think? Are we right? Are we wrong? Where should this power lie? You know, it's frustrating as a legislator to be saddled with the challenge of balancing a budget, meeting these costs that just keep increasing and increasing. And we've done a great job with our education committee, and we've supported our education committee. We've made education a priority. We've done our very best, and that's just not good enough, according to the rules that have been laid out before us. So I think this is an important resolution, and I would ask for the body's favorable vote on this.
Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I had some concerns with the resolution as drafted and some of the discussion and some of the points in the presentation that I just wanted to clarify, which were similar to concerns I had in committee. A lot of the discussion here is premised on a few points. One is that we're not getting bang for the buck, that when we look at other states, they're performing nearly as well. We haven't grown substantially in our NAEP scores, and that the dollars per student are not reasonable compared to our small performance gain over some of these lower spending states. And I just wanted to clarify a few things with regard to that. The way that the data is presented and interpreted, I think, is just a little bit misleading in that when you look at where we stand nationally, Mr. Chairman, on our NAEP scores, right now, if you aggregate across science, reading, and math in both fourth and eighth grade, Wyoming is currently ranked fourth in the country. Fourth in the country is pretty good. The states that are ahead of us are all on the East Coast, and each of them spends slightly more than we do. In fact, one of those states spends about $7,000 per student per year more than we do. So when you compare us to our current cohort as one of the top four states in the country, we're spending about what they spent. We paid a price, a substantial price, for success, for high performance. We started that process a little over a decade ago, and we really invested in education. While we were in the middle of the pack of the country, our NAEP scores were average, and accomplished just exactly what we set out to accomplish. The reason that as the data is presented, it doesn't look so substantial is because when you look at NAEP scores, they have a base. It's kind of like talking about your temperature and saying, well, it's only 3% high, so that's not bad. As it turns out, when you include the base into your calculation, small percentages can mean a lot. What you have to look at, Mr. Chairman, are standard deviations, how far you are from the norm. It's probably a Gaussian-style distribution. So the statistics do not lend themselves to simple averaging and a percent increase. That's why they're not presented that way when you look at the data on the NAEP. When you look at the website, when you look at the data, there are specific indicators saying whether it's statistically significant that state X is ahead of state Y, and they provide the confidence intervals, they provide the data behind that, and it's not a simplistic view of whether states are better than one another. It's an in-depth view that's certainly available. I can provide that data to the body if they're interested, but it clearly indicates that Wyoming is performing very highly. So the idea that we're spending too much and not getting enough, you know, I have concerns with that. But at the end of the day, I think most of the concern that the body has is just that we're in a revenue downturn and we don't have sufficient funds to do it, even if it's working, which I fully understand. I don't think anybody in this body, understands it necessarily more than I do. I've been involved in these revenue discussions and the cost discussions and recalibration and every other aspect of school funding for the last several years. And there's no question that we have our challenges at this point. But the idea that we're constitutionally prohibited from solving those problems, I believe, is inaccurate. Our hands are not tied. We have a funding formula, a recalibration process. We have a basket of goods which is actually subject to the legislature's interpretation. If we want to include a lot of things in that basket of goods, as we do now, it's an expensive basket of goods. The legislature is allowed, through legislation, to change what goes into that basket of goods. That decreases the cost. That's the discussion that's being had right now in both chambers about whether to recalibrate, how to recalibrate, and what to do. Our hands are not tied. As a matter of fact, it's quite reasonable within the process that this revenue can be addressed. We certainly have access to the authority to do that, as well as the expenditures addressed through the model and through reasonable changes. Mr. Chairman, the final concern I have really is the way that this is drafted. I'm concerned that we're being heavy-handed with regard to the courts. The fact that we're trying to say no court shall in the Constitution. I did a quick search, and it turns out that nowhere else in the Constitution are we using the words no court shall. I think that's the separation of powers equivalent to picking a fight with another branch. And I think there are better ways for us to approach this problem. It's up to the court to interpret the Constitution, to decide whether our laws are constitutional. That's their responsibility. It's our responsibility to come up with new laws, new ideas, and to try and legislate on behalf of the students and figure out how to fund it. And that tension is a natural and acceptable and reasonable tension that has helped lead us to the ranking and the academic success that we have nationally right now. We're fourth in the country to a large degree because of the history of our decisions in the state. That tension is necessary. If you take away the tension in the system, then we would end up having negative consequences, negative results, and a poorer education system for the people. Mr. Chairman, where we're at right now is not a bad place with education in the state. The funding is difficult, but we're here to meet those challenges. That's what our obligation as the legislature is to do, and we certainly have options available to us, even though they're tough options to face. Those are my concerns with the legislation. I hope the body will give it some serious thought before we move this forward. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I think that the performance, while creditable, is not as good as was raised. I think we do have to look at things like dropout rate, percentages that are requiring remedial work when they go to college. There's a whole series of things, and we could get into that in some depth, but I don't propose to. Mr. Chairman, I really want to add just one footnote relative to the timing. There was a statement made in debate, Mr. Chairman, that we could have a special election and amend the Constitution that way. When you read Article 20 on amendments of the Wyoming Constitution, it's quite clear that you have to do it at a general election. So at this point, we have a lot of flexibility on this amendment. Maybe we should carry it forward for a few readings and see if we can improve it. if we decide it isn't perfect on third reading, Mr. Chairman, we don't lose anything by coming back at it in the budget session, because the earliest we could have a vote of the people on it is the next general election, Mr. Chairman.
You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion that when the committee of a whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate Journal Joint Resolution 9, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
No.
Senate Joint Resolution 9 has passed the committee of a whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee of the whole rise and report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
There we go.
Reading clerk, please read the committee of the whole report.
Mr. President, your committee of the whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 127, do pass amended. Senate File 94, do pass. Senate File 102, do pass amended. Senate File 139, do pass. Senate Joint Resolution 8, do pass amended. Senate File 145, do pass. Senate File 147, do pass amended. Senate File 148, do pass amended. Senate File 171 failed to pass the Committee of the Whole and was indefinitely postponed. Senate Joint Resolution 9, do pass. Senator Driscoll, Chairman.
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. President, I move for adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. The Committee of the Whole report is adopted. Standing committee reports.
February 1, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred Senate File 153, Employment Non-Discrimination, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. No, Senator Anderson. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred Senate File 125, Permanent Mountain Daylight Saving Time, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. No, Senator Perkins. Senator Anderson, Acting Chair. Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred Senate File 156, State Government Efficiencies, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, I believe that clears the desk. Mr. Vice President.
Did they have, Mr. President, did they read in Senate File 156? Was that read in? Senate File 156, which is the efficiency in government, does have an appropriation. I ask that it be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Senate File 166, without objection.
156.
156, without objection, will be re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Any other re-referrals? Mr. Majority Floor, that now does clear the desk.
Mr. President, now that the desk is clear, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, February the 2nd, Groundhog Day.
Announcements. Senator Peterson.
Mr. President, your committee number 3, Revenue. We'll meet for the final time as we address Senate files. We've got a stack of them that we need to fix and get out of our committee by tomorrow. This will be tomorrow, 15 minutes after noon recess, to take up files Senate File 95, Early Retirement, Senate File 124, Taxation of Sale and Lease Transactions, Senate File 137, Sales Tax Recovery Statute of Limitations, Senate File 159, Tax Reform 2020, and Senate File 157, Education Continuing Contract Teacher Status.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet in about, let's say, 4:15 in Jonah Room S-27 to consider the following files in the House bill. Senate File 170, Unmanned Aircraft. House Bill 51, Engrossed, Borrowing Authority for Department of Transportation. House Bill 78, Engrossed, Salvage Title Updates.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. President. Committee number 12, Rules, will meet Thursday. That's tomorrow, 30 minutes after noon recess in Jonah Room S-18 to discuss Senate File 28, Revisers Bill.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. President. Your committee number 6, Travel, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. That's Thursday, February 2nd. We'll meet in Jonah Room S-27 to continue discussion of migratory bird refuge, Senate File 169, and continuing on to House Bill 30, Engrossed, State Parks and Sites Fees, House Bill 33, Engrossed, Non-Resident Motorboat Gasoline Tax Distribution, and if we have time, House Bill 61, Collection of Antlers and Horns.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet down in L-55 at 4:15 also. In addition to the bills that I already mentioned at the noon recess, we will also take up Senate File 156, Efficiency in Government, which was just which the Vice President just asked to be re-referred, and any other re-referred bill that I might have forgotten to mention.
Senator Burns, would you mind telling us the bills on your list?
Sure. Senate File 140, I-80 Project Master Plan. Senate File 155, Bar and Grill Liquor License Increase. Senate File, and that is a re-referral. The rest are all re-referrals. Senate File 123, School Nutrition Pilot Program. Senate File 131, State Revenues and Expenditure Review. Senate File 165, School Finance Education Funding Reductions. And Senate File 156, Efficiency in Government.
Thank you, Senator Burns. Any other announcements? You heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carried. The Senate is adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, Thursday, February 2nd, Groundhog Day. Senator Cohen, Wasserberger, could you, before you get out of here, come talk to me in the office, please?